Interrobang.
On today's episode of Interrobang, I'm super lucky to be joined by my super good buddy, Sam Warnick. You can find him at samwarnick.com. He's a developer, web developer extraordinaire, but also just kind of a creative genius. He recently invented his own trading card game and made me a custom Cat Skull trading card. So if you want to find more information about that, we didn't actually get into that on the podcast, or his app, ScreenCred, which we do get into on the podcast. You can find that at samwarnick.com. But other than that, without further ado, I'd love to get right into it. Welcome back to Interrobang. I am here with my buddy, Sam Warnick. I met Sam in, well, what year would that have been? 2014? It was after that. 2016, 2017?
Yeah, 2016.
And we got hired at the same company as intern scrubs, and we sat in the same office. And then we've just been buds. I don't know. You're a front-end developer extraordinaire, also native iOS developer. Used to come to the Vue meetups with me. That was a long time ago. And now you're a front-end developer, but you do a lot more stuff than that, right?
Yeah, I do. I mostly just answer questions.
Answer questions for people. And my questions, or are you talking about for work?
Yeah, for work.
Yeah, not your kids' questions.
What did you want?
What did I want? What do I want?
Well, yeah, you said front-end developer, but I do more.
Yes.
What were you referring to?
I was referring to, which is a great question. Okay, here's my first question. You grew up in New York State?
Yep.
What was that like?
Good. follow up question?
I grew up in Utah, and I imagine you have lived in Utah. I've never lived in New York. And you're familiar with Southern Utah, where I grew up. So, yeah, what's the vibe like in New York compared to, I guess, Utah?
I mean, it's pretty different. So where I'm from, Ithaca, it's often described as 10 square miles surrounded by reality. So it's a little bit different than like New York State in general.
Okay.
It was, like, at one point, like, the greenest city in the U.S. I don't know if that's still true, but, like, even compared to, like, Portland, Oregon and stuff, so.
Wow.
I mean, I really liked growing up there.
Ithaca, New York.
Yeah. It's just, it's very beautiful. A lot of waterfalls, Finger Lakes, and seasons. Four seasons a year.
Yeah, that's cool. So when you say it's surrounded by 10 miles of reality?
It is 10 square miles surrounded by reality.
Oh, so it's like it's outside of reality? That's what that's saying?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Just kind of do their own thing.
How many people live there generally? Do you know? Like, is it like tiny? Tiny town?
It's not tiny. So it's like, I think it's like 20 or 30,000 permanent residents and then a similar amount of students.
Oh, okay. There's a school there.
Yeah, there's two universities there.
Oh, so it's pretty big. It's a pretty big town.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably hits above its weight.
Yeah. But. Well, I don't know. I was just thinking because I spent my early childhood in a town called Oak City, Utah, which is like, no, like even people that like know about Utah like don't know about Oak City unless you know about it, and that really was like it was like a town of like 500. Like it's still, I went back there, it's like still like 500 people.
Yeah,
like town square. There's not even a store. Like you can't spend money there even if you wanted to. But like from a very early age, like you know, it's like pre-K. I pretty much just like had. Like, honestly, I would read, like, Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, and, like, it would just be like, oh, yeah, that was, like, kind of like what it was like growing up in Oak City, honestly. Like, obviously, you know, there's crazy things, but I don't know. Was that kind of, so what did you do when you were a kid there in Ithaca? Like, I mean, were you guys, like, play outside in the forest, or were you indoors, or what?
Yeah, so we lived outside of town, like, maybe 15-20 minutes, so we had about 15 acres, I think, 10 to 15 acres and of like old farmland. So there's woods we would go play in. And yeah, we didn't really have neighbors, so it's just my brothers. And then just trying to think. So like my high school, we had, my graduating class was about 100 students. Like the actual town I lived in was pretty small, but yeah.
That's cool. So you guys would go out in the forest and what, make forts, hurt each other?
Yeah, we, yeah, tree forts or just little bush forts, like digging out, cutting out stuff.
Wait, like, you see, that's like, that's kind of like one of the things I feel like there's a major difference between growing up in Utah and growing up in New York is like, in Utah, the oldest man-made structure is, well, I don't know, it's probably what, like, I mean, it's not, but it's like kind of one of the temples probably, right? But like in New York, like, I don't, like, out in the forest in New York, like, who knows what you might find out there? Like, you know, there's all sorts of, I don't know, like, were there, I don't know the history, this is going to sound stupid, but were there any, like, Revolutionary War battles or anything like that fought in that area, or is there any history there?
Yeah, a little bit. So, you're probably familiar with, like, Fort Ticonderoga. That is somewhat close.
Interesting.
I actually don't know how far away that is. I know, so my area in Ithaca, a lot of it, I believe, was given as payment to, like, revolutionary soldiers. So after the war, a lot of people came in there. But I think as when they're bringing cannons from Fort Ticonderoga, I think they did come through that area. But I'm not aware of any, like, battles there.
But that's, like, that's what I mean, though. Like, that's the crazy thing is, like, you go out in the forest and, like honestly, like, you could stumble across a cannon or, like, a cannonball. Like, these things happen, right? People find them buried in their backyard. Like, I mean, we'd maybe find an arrowhead, you know, or, like, like hieroglyphs, and those are cool, too. But I don't know, just to be, yeah, that's very interesting to hear about. Okay, next question. What's your relationship like with social media?
I kind of hate it now. Like, I was just, I recently, like, started checking Mastodon more frequently because of WWDC. So I just kind of wanted to get the pulse on stuff. And I don't know, everybody's just super negative and down.
Really?
On everything. Like, not just Apple and developer stuff, but just, like, the vibe on social media is just to complain about things.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a drag on me lately.
What social media platforms do you use besides Mastodon, I guess?
That's it. I don't check. I still have my Instagram account, but I haven't checked that in months. I think I have a Blue Sky account.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Are you interested in Blue Sky?
I mean, like, theoretically interested or academically interested, but not enough to, I don't know. It's finding people that are interesting enough to follow. Like, that's the hard part. That was, I don't know, kind of the nice thing about Twitter and the algorithm is that you would follow a few people that you knew were good, and then you would get the stuff that they liked into your timeline to help you discover more. So it's like, with the way Mastodon works, and I think even like RSS, like, you can get into an echo chamber really quickly because you're only really seeing the people you've chosen to follow, which is good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like, and I guess I've seen, it seems like I've seen on some specific servers, they have like a trending page. Like, I can't remember. I don't know. I signed up for a new account on like techhub.social for my Wikipedia archive bot thing. Just randomly, you know, like, just to try different one. It's like kind of interesting to see like the weird little things that are different than like Mastodon.social. It's also interesting, like, there are like, it seems like there's like a surprisingly few amount of like seemingly like valid Mastodon certain, I guess I call them instances. Like, and I don't want to diss on all these like admins or whatever, but like, if you just like want like I'm just like regular Mastodon. Like there's not that many. I don't know. It's like kind of interesting. And then it was interesting because I signed up for the account on Tech Hub, and then they like freaking, I got this like email. They were like, your account has been like limited or whatever, because I broke some rule about like automated posting that like, I don't even understand like what they're even talking about. And I just replied like, I mean, I'm like manually posting these. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then like 72 hours later, they just like reversed the, like, I don't know, dude. Like, it almost kind of felt like it's just like with some like admin out here, just like,
yeah,
you just gotta like, it's like, just relax. Like, and then I was like going to, well, and this is what I want to ask you too, because I know you have experience running your own Mastodon instance, but what do you have to say about that? About all of that?
Right. I mean, running your own instance, like, you obviously, if it's a single user one, like, you don't have to worry about all the moderation and stuff, but you do have to worry about, the way it's federated, it can be difficult to get all the content you would expect to see. It doesn't automatically download replies and things like that. So you can look at someone's posts and not see all the replies, because you're just a little server that just isn't hooked up the same way the big ones are.
But I feel like I've even seen that on Mastodon.social.
Yeah.
I honestly assumed that that was like their intent. They're like, yeah, we're just not going to show you. Like, we'll show you if you've clicked the button, but like, we're not going to like show you like a number. I don't know. Is that true? Or is it supposed to show like number of likes?
I think it's supposed to, there might be a setting to show like number of likes. I can't remember that, but like, there is a real issue with small single user instances not getting all of that data. And then kind of like the moderation thing, like, it reminds me a lot of, you know, like overeager Reddit moderators or something, where it's just like their little domain and they love the rules, and the like, good rules are good, like, create safe space for people online and stuff, but at the same time, it can get overboard.
Yeah, when it becomes like, the point is to enforce the rules, but
like, every instance has their own rules, like you're saying, like, it can be difficult to know, are those rules even up to date? What are they following?
Yeah. Well, that's the other funny thing, dude, is you can go on whatever, like, the main Mastodon.org, and they have like an index list of every server or instance that you can join. But like, you click, like, it has like a little brief bio, but like, it doesn't show you all their like crazy specific rules and everything. And you click the link and then it takes you to their sign up page, which also doesn't tell you the rules. Like, so then it's like, you're trying to, I guess you go find like the admin account for that instance. But then it's like, even then, like, I found, that whole, like, I don't know, cause I had to look through like, I don't know, four or five that I like really gave a solid look at. And it was like, and then on top of that, it's like, they all have these like, it's like, we don't allow, like, I'm just like, I don't know how to keep track of this.
And it's like, you need to find an instance that is big, but not too big. Because if it's small, like, who knows when it'll get shut down.
Even
big ones shut down. They just are like, we can't maintain it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, people were excited about Mozilla having their own instance, and then they're just like, all right, experiment's over.
See, I was so this is interesting. I was enthused and also nonplussed. I was enthused and nonplussed in the original term meaning unenthused, that I found out that archive.org actually has a Mastodon instance. So they only allow for employee account, staff accounts, and then like their boss. But it's like, dude, for me, like, I would love to have, like, because you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That implies to me that you have archive.org archiving their own Mastodon instance, right? Like, that was actually the first place I turned to. It was like, I wonder if archive.org has a Mastodon instance I can hop on, but they do, but no, I cannot hop on it. So yeah, that's a valid point. It's like, and like, these admins, it's like, we are a cyberbully free zone. It's like, they're going to flame out. And then what happened? Like, so that's why. Okay. So here's my question. So if I run my own server, I don't really care about like discovery. Like, I don't really view Mastodon, I don't open up Mastodon.social like to discover content, really. I like find random people's blogs on Hacker News or whatever, you know, it is you find people online, and it's like, oh, what social platforms are they using? Oh, they're using Mastodon. I'll follow them. And then there's a couple of people now that I don't really know who they are, but I just kind of found them randomly through that way. And I've had like positive interactions with them on Mastodon. So my question is, like, if I run my own instance, like, what am I missing out on? Because I can still follow them, and I'll, are you saying that, like, I might not, I guess I don't really care about all their replies either. And if I really wanted, if I really did care, I could just like open the link to view it on their native instance, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's been a minute, 'cause I used to, and then I just got tired of,
updating the Docker. Yeah,
it was like every week there was a new one, and I always felt like, oh man, I'm gonna destroy it.
Yeah,
and almost did a couple times,
because it's like, it's not like a simple tech stack either. It's not like, oh, it's just like, it's like a pretty involved full stack application.
Yeah,
right?
And like the Docker does make it easier than running at bare metal, but it still just feels a little sketch. But I mean, yeah, like for the stuff you're doing, it's probably fine. I mean, you have to pay for it. It's not free, because you have to host it somewhere.
Well, yeah, that's what, okay, but that's what I'm saying. So I have my little NAS, and I've got dynamic DNS.
You might be able to do that.
I don't want to pay for a VPS.
Yeah. Yeah, I was paying for like a Linode, and like it wasn't cheap because I needed quite a bit of RAM to handle media uploads, because it needs to process, like, especially videos would bring it to its knees.
Oh, and see, then you go back to the question is like, what's your point of sharing the content, right? Because like, okay, so if I just simply want to have a list of all the random Wikipedia articles that I've read and think are interesting. Like, mm-hmm. Mastodon is probably, like, it's a convenient, I mean, it's convenient because it has, like, the RSS stuff, so it's easy to integrate, yeah. But, like, should I mean, I've made, it's an Apple shortcut, right, with a share sheet, so it's, like, I've made shortcuts that connect to Cloudflare workers and do Git commits and add Markdown to a repo, like, should I just be doing that? Like, so then I don't have to worry, like, I don't have to deal with the Docker instance, I don't have to worry about some instance shutting down, like, I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if your goal is sort of like archiving, like, I don't think Mastodon's the best place for that. I think, like you're saying, just updating a text file in a Git repo is going to be way more archival and have a history to it as well. You could even just like create an RSS feed from like that file so that you could subscribe to it, or people could subscribe to it. How you would, you know, determine new entries, that might be, no, that wouldn't be too hard. You just regenerate it every single time.
Yeah.
You don't have to like add new things to the RSS feed. So that would be kind of cool.
That would be kind of cool. I incidentally have been spending quite a bit of time manually creating RSS feeds, like handwriting the XML and the if statement to loop over. I actually, speaking of, for this podcast, you know, because that was part of the setup, it's like, oh, like apparently you have to, apparently a podcast feed is just RSS. I learned this from you. And so you have your own podcast, The Lily and Sam Show, which has an RSS feed, which I downloaded and essentially pirated. I changed, you know, I command F like Lily and Sam to like Dave DeGraw, but other than that, it's identical. Yeah, it was like just really good reference and surprisingly, you know, not that hard. I guess it's not fully done, 'cause I have to figure out how I'm going to store all my MP3s and everything. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah. That's reminding me, I need to run the deploy so it'll update the latest episode from like over a year ago.
Yeah, so how does that work? So you, because you're using a podcast like host, right? And so
yeah, so I use Libsyn to host it, so the website will just pull the feed,
yeah,
parse it into JSON basically, and then I use that JSON to create the website.
But you have to manually bump it?
I have to manually bump it. Like, it used to be automatic because the website would generate the RSS feed. It worked the other way around. So when I publish a new episode, it would hit a webhook or something like that to trigger a deploy.
Wow.
But now it works the other way around.
But then you're saying you're looking into the 11T podcasting plugin.
Yeah, like, podcast doesn't get that many downloads, so it's conceivable to put the MP3 files directly in the repo and have Netlify host them.
Yeah.
And then that would simplify a lot and save me $5 a month.
Yeah, dude. And I was wondering, because that was my plan. Like, I'm just going to put them in my repo, I guess.
Yeah.
And, dude, I don't know. Though my repo, like, well, let me get back to that. But, well, I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say my repo is growing. My personal blog repo size is growing in size and also in build length and complexity. Like, mm-hmm. I've got these, like, crazy custom plugins. And I don't understand fully how 11T works. But, like, I know you're doing, like, crazy media, like, what's the image preview, the OG image? Like, you're doing that stuff on the fly. How does that all, like, does that take a while to run?
It does take a while to run because it needs to generate the image for each post. And I've got, I don't know, like 100 posts now or something. And so every time the site builds, I could cache them and that would speed it up. But I don't because I'm lazy, but it has to generate it for everything. But I kind of had the same concerns. I used to have all my images in the repo, but then it just started getting big, take a while to download. Yeah.
And Git is like, I feel like they purposefully, your GitHub, like purposely, I feel like they throttle their downloads like through Git. Like, it's super slow. Like, it's crazy slow. Like, anyways. So
yeah, they probably do, because I mean, it's a lot of bandwidth, like people downloading gigabytes of images and videos and stuff. Like,
dude, I've got the repo for work is like old enough now that like even just the Git, like the .git portion of the folder is like over a gig.
Oh my,
wait, is that possible? I feel like I need to double check that, but like it's absurd. Know. It's like wild. Like, and then you like, can you get rid of all that information? And it's like, no. Like, you look on second and like, if you delete the Git information, you're like,
I mean, evil. That's like your history, right? Like, that'd like, be like,
but it's like a gig, dude.
History. I know.
It's interesting because Git is a good tool, but like, you know, Homebrew uses Git a lot. Like, that's like all Homebrew really is Git under the hood. And I feel like Homebrew is like kind of a clunky piece of crap. So. I don't know. I kind of hope Git gets some, I don't know what's up with it. It's just, it works super well, but it's also kind of jank. So it'd be nice to see that get some love.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not super familiar with like how it could be better, but I know a lot of people talk about how it should be better.
Like, it just feels slow.
But yeah, it feels slow, but it's like, it's like what we have and it's the standard and it's just like,
it's so much better than not having I never used, did like, you ever use any other version control system?
I don't think I've ever used anything else.
I don't think
I have. Yeah, I'm pretty sure like Git when I was in college or we were in college was like the standard at that point.
That's funny. And it was funny, like, you know, when we were starting out back in those early days, because I would talk to the old timers about like how they do it before Git existed and, you know, uploading files in FTP folder.
I just realized I should have been recording my end.
For what it's worth, you look and sound amazing, but you can do that optionally as well.
Yeah. Okay. I started a quick time recording halfway through.
It's so like I've got my audio. So I'm listening to my audio. Like the Wave XLR has like a built-in feedback thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm listening to my audio through that and I'm listening to your audio through Discord and your sound's literally just as good. Crystal smooth. Okay, I want to get back to my list of questions. Actually, you mentioned WWDC, you know, getting back on Mastodon for that. I follow, is it David Smith? from your recommendation?
Yeah, David Smith.
Follow him. And then I can't remember what her name is, but somebody on the WebKit team, Jen Simmons, I think.
Yeah, Jen Simmons.
But I was kind of curious because, like, you're the most hardcore Apple dude, Apple developer I know. Like, and I know you've been working a lot on your app ScreenCred, which you guys should download if you don't know. It's an app that basically lets you do, like, a Git diff of two movies. So, like, what are the similarities? Who are the people involved that are the same? So it's really cool. Like, I use it today because I really like historical dramas that are accurate. Like, and so part of that accuracy is set and production design. So I was like, well, I like Lincoln and I like the HBO miniseries John Adams. So I want to see who worked on those together. Turns out same production designer, you know, so I can go look at this dude and now I have a whole wealth. Like, he did There Will Be Blood. Like, he's a super big deal, you know, he's like worked on a lot of good stuff, but he's also worked on a lot of obscure stuff, you know, like, so it's a really cool app and you've been doing a lot of really cool work on it, getting it ready for what do they call it? Liquid Glass.
Yeah, Liquid Glass, iOS 26.
So what are your thoughts so far on Liquid Glass, on the process of upgrading your app? Is it cool? Is it like, I don't know, does it feel exciting or does it feel like, oh, this is like one more thing I get to deal with?
Yeah, so it feels exciting because like we've talked about, the current design is a little tired. It's not completely in line with, it doesn't fit totally in with iOS design. Like, I was trying to do something different, which, like, I still like it, and I wanted to just try to push Swift UI, you know, like, a little further than most apps you see.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was just trying stuff, but I think, you know, every time there's a new, you know, version, it's a good opportunity to rethink things, and so that's what I like about the WWDC time, and so... Yeah, I've been enjoying rethinking things. Like, there's a lot I could change even without Liquid Glass. Like, honestly, Liquid Glass feels like a pretty minimal thing.
Really?
And I'm curious to see how it'll change over the summer, because it is, in a lot of cases, pretty unreadable. So it'll be interesting to see if they dial it back at all or how they adjust it so that you can actually see what things say.
Well, that was my first question I asked you, right? Was like, I am a user of bold text and high contrast mode on my it's like literally one of like the major, like, if I had to switch to Windows or something, it's like, that would be like, it would kill me. Like, it would literally, like, I don't think, like, even when I like use like my wife's phone, like, doesn't have it turned on, I'm like, how do you even, like, I can't read this, right? I'm kind of spoiled by it. So that was my first question with Liquid Glass, was like, what does it look like on high contrast mode? What does it look like with bold, like, just like selfishly, honestly. But I do remember, man, I worked at Simply Mac, you know, and it's like a kind of like a small time Apple, it's like an Apple Store clone that's owned by GameStop. They're now out of business, but I worked there during when iOS 7 came out, you know. Okay. And I remember this lady came in, like this older lady, and she was just like so mad that like her phone had upgraded to iOS 7 and like the calendar app was like unusable now, like all this like UI stuff. And so, yeah, man, it will be interesting because like if there are like usability issues with it, I mean, there would be justifiable pushback, but all the feedback I've heard about it is like people are pretty stoked.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it looks cool, and you know, from what they've said, you know, they've considered accessibility, maybe not totally in the base case, but they're like, yeah, we know about reduced transparency and increased contrast. Like, they've been considering those settings as they've been designing it. I don't know how well those work. There's still quite a few bugs in the betas, but it's it'll be interesting. Like, I mean, I had the little picture in picture, you know, thing watching a video, and it had a white background in the video, and I couldn't see the controls at all. Like, if I didn't know what was like go back 10 seconds or go forward, like, it was just circles of glass. Like, I couldn't see anything.
It's very interesting.
I think that'll obviously be fixed, like, but it's there's a lot of little things like that right now.
Okay, so Have you heard like the, well, and I kind of have this conspiracy theory too, but I also saw some other, you know, I don't know, people chattering about this, that like this is preparing app, like this is preparing for like a holographic device or some kind of like a, like it's kind of it, like to me, it feels like, you know, they came out with Vision OS and the spatial computing concept. And this is just like the next evolution really of that. Like they're like, oh, this is what we learned from like, or some of the things we learned from spatial computing. And we're going to bring that to the glass. And it's funny that they like, they're like, why is glass so incredible? And it's like, maybe it's because the freaking phone screen is glass, dude. Like maybe that's why it's natural, because it is glass. Like, so you expect it to be glass. It's not because glass is like magic. It's because you're touching a glass thing that like, anyways, pretty interesting. So I guess that's my question is like, do you think it's possible that Apple like is designing this primarily like not for the iPhone use case?
I don't know. It's definitely possible. Like
if they come out with a new headset in the fall, sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, like the, if it's a new headset, like a new Vision Pro, like that's just gonna be Vision OS. Like it's not gonna look that much different than Vision OS. Like I could see this being more of a thing with actual glasses with actual transparency, but I don't know. I kind of feel like they just thought it would look cool and then came up with the narrative after about how it, you know, ties into, you know, the physical world.
Really? And, you and think Apple's like just that. Like sitting in Cupertino, they're just like, let's see how we can make iOS look cooler. Like, I mean, obviously, I guess they're making a big effort to unify the design of their platform.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it kind of seems like they had the idea, okay, we want a unified design, and they just threw out ideas and someone's like, well, I can do this cool shader thing on the background to make it look like, warp it like you're looking through glass, and
that's it.
Just went from there. Yeah, that's it. You got
Johnny
it.
Johnny Ive is like, that's it. That was actually, so this is actually a question that I wrote down, and I'm glad that you bring this up. Did Apple copy liquid glass from you?
From me?
Yeah. Did they steal the idea?
I don't believe so.
I have a samwarnick.com blog post that I can point to from the pre-WWDC wherein you were successfully implementing, experimenting with liquid glass design and pure CSS.
Okay, what is that? Is that like
your web component? Web
component?
Yeah.
Okay, well that's not liquid glass, so
it's the same. It's glass. Like that
that's
looks
frosted
to me,
glass, and that is the current design and of iOS and macOS.
Really?
Where you can, yeah, where you they have materials of different thicknesses that determine how blurred
it is, or how blurred
something is, and the vibrancy of it behind it. So that was my implementation of like sort of the current thing, and that's done with backdrop filters.
So okay, so that's just like basically diffusing the color, yeah, or whatever. But liquid glass is like they're like doing crazy math to like if it was like literally like a rounded edge of glass, they're like,
yep.
Okay, so it's not the same thing. It looks,
it's not the same thing.
And liquid glass, I mean, you've seen it. I haven't. Like, what do you think about it as far as just using it and kind of interacting with it?
Yeah, I think it is cool. Like, it looks neat. Does it actually gain anything? I don't really think so.
Really?
It takes up, like, if you consider the tab bar on iOS, it takes up the same amount of space. You still can't interact with things behind it. You can see it, but it's like, what does that gain you? Not really anything, but it looks cool. And that is sometimes valuable in and of itself.
Yeah, and so it's notable.
That's kind of it. I kind of like the animations with it, like the dynamic island with live activities. So, you know, things kind of like pluck out,
yeah,
like it's not just, it has sort of more of that liveliness to the animations. Like that's where the liquid comes in, like the glass kind of flows into different shapes.
And I feel like, to me, that's a little bit where, like, I feel like what Apple's talking about isn't totally just BS, because, like, you know, even if you look at iOS 7 or whatever before then, like, the look at the hardware that was running on versus your iPhone 16 Pro or whatever, even, like, not even the Pro, but, like, we've got these, like, yeah, like, incredible, but what even display technology are they using anymore? Is it OLED or mini LED?
The iPhones are OLED.
So you got these, like, high refresh rate OLED displays, like, beautifully laminated, the glass, like, I mean, literally, the iPhone has never looked better, like, the display on it. And so, yeah, like, it does kind of make sense that, like, they're making use of these high refresh rates to do these really cool animations. But, like, it's adaptive refresh rate, so it's not like you're just losing battery. Like, it's cool to see. I don't know, because there's always, like, it's weird with technology. Like, Apple's never at the very beginning, but they're always, like, kind of, like, holding up the rear, kind of, like, not even necessarily the rear, but, like, by the time they come out with it, usually it's pretty good. So it's kind of cool to see some of those features, because, like, Android has had high refresh rate forever, but, like, what does that look like? Like, I don't know, material.
Yeah, like, I thought it was interesting, you know, with Google I/O this year, that, you know, the big thing in whatever version of Android it is now, that there's a big focus on sort of animations that feel lifelike, you know, springiness and stuff, which is, you know, iOS animations are all built on springs and stuff because those feel natural too. And so it's like Android was, you know, moving a similar direction, and then Apple just kind of like, all right, now watch us, and, you know, took animations and everything to, you know, maybe a whole another level, but just like a little more refined.
Like, I don't know that anybody's ever really done something like this before. Like, well, we've done some stuff like this, but again, like, not very well. Then again, I think Windows 95 is pretty well designed, so but that's besides the point. Yeah, it is interesting. Okay, so I was gonna say then, like, with WWDC, what's your, like, favorite any, like, highlight, you know, well, I guess what I mean to say is, I don't know if this is new, but Apple has been uploading the sessions to YouTube. They have their YouTube account now. In the past, that wasn't the case. I know recent years it has been, but especially with this WWDC, is this the first time that they've, like, released all the videos basically, like, at the same time? Like,
yeah, this is the first year. This is the first year that they dropped all the videos day one and all at the same time.
Wow. So
that, I think that was great, because it was kind of a pain when there's a video you wanted to watch, but it came out on Thursday, so you'd have to wait all week to watch a 20-minute video.
So how does that work for the people that are there then?
I think same way. So when you're there, I believe there's a lot more in-person stuff you can do, like meeting with engineers to do labs and, like, design reviews and stuff. So I think why they did this is so that the people there would have a chance that night to watch the stuff they wanted to and be more prepared for labs later in the week. And then it's also a win for everyone else.
For noobs or scrubs, we just get to watch them.
We just watch what we want. Right away.
So is there did you watch any sessions that, like, any favorite? I, like, there were a couple that kind of, like, were I didn't expect that I enjoyed.
Yeah, I think I've liked them all. All the ones I've watched I thought were good, but the one that caught me off guard was the interface writing one. I forget what it was called. I can find that. But,
oh, you shared that, where they talked about, like, the grammar and, like, trimming down vocabulary and user interfaces.
Like, it was just super concise, good writing advice.
Yeah.
You know, of course, with a slight Apple bend, but I think it is broadly applicable to all writing.
Yes.
Just making things concise, cutting out the fluff, and putting what's important first.
Like, the example I saw that they showed was, like, it wasn't like Uber, but it was a delivery or something like that. It was like, and they, yeah, the way that they showed it, just like, dude, if you're in the situation where your freaking delivery is late, like, you don't want it to be like, hey, how's it, like, it's very interesting, right? Like, is that such a...
Oopsie.
I've seen that, dude. I've seen that firsthand, because it's hard, because you want to make friendly and accessible, but, I don't know. I think that the most friendly
is just being straight with people.
Keep your hands and feet inside the ride at all times. Like, you don't need to be friendly. It's just like, here's the information you need to know to act on it. Like, we don't, hey, bud, we have a rule. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, that's just condescending. Maybe if you're a kid, maybe if you're on like, so.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, you like that.
I guess.
The, what do you, did you look up the title of it? Do you remember what it was actually called? I can look it up.
Give me a minute. Or I can send it to you afterwards for the show notes.
Show notes, as if I'm going to compile them. I just have to wait till I'm big enough that, like, people do it for me. No, I don't know. We'll see.
Let's see. Where do I go? History.
Dude, my kids are screaming.
I think my robot vacuum's going right now.
All right, well, I'll say for me, one of the standout ones that I did not expect was Quantum Safe Crypto. Did you see me?
I didn't watch it, but did you watch it?
Yeah, dude. It was way good. Get ahead with quantum secure cryptography. I don't know. It's just, like, really cool. Like, this is an area that is, like, highly misunderstood, not well understood. There's a lot of, like, FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There's a lot of, like, it's kind of like this Web3 crap too, like, all tied up into it, and like, there's just a lot of, like, weird info. So just to see Apple, like, you know, in their WWDC way, like, it's almost like creepy in a way, the way they do their videos. Like, you feel like you're in heaven, like, you're dead. Like, they're just so polished, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just refreshing for me to see, like, Apple talk about, like, I don't know, people, like, want to have debates about privacy and Google and Apple and crap, and it's like, is Google giving their developers tools to have quantum safe cryptography in their apps? Like,
I mean, I think the answer is yes. I'm pretty sure Google and Apple and others work together on this algorithm.
But as far as, like, the API and tools and, like, actually
Maybe not. I don't know yet. I mean, it's wild to me that we have algorithms for quantum encryption when we don't.
You should watch the video, dude, because they totally explain the why. Like, they explain, like, attack vectors.
I'll watch it.
You don't have to, but again, like, just to see this kind of content from Apple, like, let alone, I mean, any, like, industry leader, really, but in Apple's, like, super squeaky clean way, I was like, dang, that's cool. I saw, you know, WebGPU one. I didn't actually watch that, but just seeing Apple, I don't know, like, it's just cool to see them talk about open platform stuff, web stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think there were some WebKit videos. Like, what's new with WebKit?
WebKit just dropped a huge update, like, a week before WWDC. So, like, they had a really good blog post on that, but... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just listened to a podcast with Jen Simmons.
Oh, really?
On it. She's talking about how they have, like, a third developer evangelist or whatever they call them on the WebKit team, and so they're able to push out more blog content now. So, like, weekly, they've just been
Think one becomes, this is actually the next question I was going to ask you. The first question is, how do you think one becomes a developer evangelist for WebKit? And the second question is, what's your dream job?
Okay. First question, I think, is like, become a successful content maker, like, have a following on social media and speak at conferences.
Do you know
stuff.
It is Jen Simmons? I don't know her other than the context of WebKit. Do you know it? Like, is she somebody that's from, like, been around, or?
Yeah, she's been around. I think she worked at Mozilla for like doing Firefox stuff, but
cool. Okay.
Maybe don't quote me on that. Like, yeah, she's been in.
I mean, the WebKit team is killing it, you know? Like, I'm seeing better WebKit content right now than I'm seeing from freaking web.dev.
Yeah, her website currently says, "I'm a designer and developer advocate at Mozilla." I think that might need to be updated, but
that's cool.
So okay. I think that's the path, you know, speak at conferences, get a following on social media, and then know someone at Apple, probably.
Yeah, just like anything. What's your dream job?
Oh, what is my dream job?
Right now.
Yeah, I think my dream job right now would be to make apps, like be an indie app developer, but like part time, and then do nothing the other part time.
Go on walks. But
yeah, spend time outside with the family. But I mean, that's what I love, making apps. I just don't love being told what to make or having customers.
Yeah.
So if I could have a job where I make whatever I want with whatever, but that's not super realistic.
Do you know of anybody that like is there anybody that you know that you can think of that like has that job basically that you can like try and copy? Or is it like, is this something you would be inventing? Like, would you be the first person you know of that to do this?
No, so I mean, if you think of other indie developers, like successful ones, it's almost like, you know, becoming viral. Like, you just luck. Have a lot luck of luck.
Skill, I mean,
obviously, yeah, luck and skill. And so, like, you obviously need customers. Like, that part of my dream job, I think, is just like a no-go. So it's like, I think that would be my dream, realistic dream, you know, one or two apps that make enough money that I could just work part time. And I think there's plenty of examples of that
really
out there. But I think a lot of it is the luck part and also just the ability to put in the time. And it's like, I don't want to stay up late or wake up super early to work on it right now. I've got too much other stuff to take energy.
So then could you say that your dream job is a job that you currently have? Is that depressing or is that inspiring?
Say that again.
Is your dream job the job you currently have? Because like, here, this is my conundrum, right? It's like, I could have done something differently. I could have made a different choice, but it's like, well, I am who I am. And I make the choices and optimize my life. How I mean, I don't even fully understand it, right? But like, there's some formula in my brain at, I don't know, chemical level or something. So like, could I be happier than I am right now? Like, I guess like I could imagine, right? Like, I don't know. I could, my house could be cooler and my kids could not be screaming, but.
Yeah, I believe this instant, I cannot be happier than I am at this particular instant.
Okay.
But in the future, I could be happier than I am.
You could optimize. Well,
yeah.
But is that like, I mean, yeah. So how much can you influence that though?
I think.
And what does make the difference? Like what? Yeah. Okay. That's another good question then. So, and it gets into it. Like, what makes you happy? Like what's worth it? Right? Like what's. A lot of crap is not worth it, right? Like Prime Day, it's not worth it. There's just stuff like having nice, expensive, I don't know. Most stuff isn't worth it, right? So like, what's worth it? If you look back and if you look back on the last 10 years, what's been worth it?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, obviously the things that are worth it. Maybe I shouldn't say obviously. Because it's different for every single person, but
for you,
you know, time with my family is worth it. And so it's like, there have been occasions I've considered pay cuts to have more time with my family.
Oh yeah.
Didn't take them for various reasons, but they were options that I would consider and would consider in the future. And then, yeah, I don't know. That's, I think what's worth it to me really is time. Like, you know, time is the one resource that is limited, that we don't exactly have complete control over. So it's like, whatever I could do to have more of my time, not for someone else, like a job or other various commitments, like for me and my family, like that's worth it to me.
Time.
And so then, yeah, time. And then kind of an extension for there, it's like, I want to make the time I do have.
Yes.
You know, comfortable. Ask about this.
Okay.
And so, like, you know, me and my wife, we think it's worth it to make our home somewhere we want to be, because we spend a lot of time here as a family. So we're going to invest in that to make it so that we want to be here. We do a little less traveling because the traveling is not worth it.
Yeah.
Sometimes sure, the destination sometimes is, but the travel not always.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Okay.
What do you think?
Oh man, I didn't expect you to ask me that. Like, I don't know. I was going to say, because like one thing you mentioned about time, like having time, time is like super freaking interesting, isn't it? Like, it's like the concept of like 2 hours on an airplane versus like 2 hours at a theme park, at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Like, what is that time? You know, like, and so, I don't know, there is some, well, like, yeah, I was talking to my friend the other day, you know, and I was, I can't remember what we were talking about, but like, he was like, man, I just wish that there was like 25 hours in a day. Like, I would just wish I had like an extra hour. And I was like, what if you just worked 7 hours instead of eight? Like, well, you can do that, right? Like, so first of all, like, there's an element of like, let me get like just raw time, right? And I think parents especially, we struggle with this because it's like, my kids go to bed at 8:30 and then I go to like, I have 2 hours, like, but the thing about it is like, I don't know, dude, it like almost doesn't really work that way. Like, I know that it does, like, okay, 8 hours of sleep is 8 hours of sleep, right? Like, there's no, I don't know, you could sleep on a better bed and get better rest, but like, ultimately, it's pretty much the experience is the experience. But I guess what I think about is like, you said like, you know, you want to make your time more comfortable. And so it's like, how do you make that time more enriching? Right. Like, it's like, I'm like reading a book and listening to an audio, like a podcast while I'm playing with my kids at the park. Like, clearly that's not it. Right. Like, what is it?
Cause it's the other thing, you know, time and then energy is the other thing energy. I think about a lot. And so it's like, I have time at the end of the day, but I may not have energy to make that time worthwhile because I've had a long day of meetings or, you know, work or whatever it is. You get to the end of the day and it's like, you have the time, you don't necessarily have the energy to make it worthwhile. So it's like, even if you had, you know, 16 hours a day of not sleeping, to jam pack full of theme parks and whatever, eventually you're going to run out of energy.
Yeah.
And that time is not going to be worth.
Unless you're a kid.
It's kind of like you need to like somehow, you know, manage the energy so that you have the right amount of energies at the right time.
Yeah. So you just kind of like take it slow.
Yeah.
Sometimes you run.
Yeah.
Okay, let me, how you doing on time? I know it's late for you.
I'm good. No, I'm good.
Have you had any good snacks lately?
I mean, yeah, too many. Father's Day was on Sunday, so I got a lot of snacks as presents. One of the good ones... Okay, I'll just list them all. I got Oreos.
You love Oreos. Love
Oreos. Yeah. Gardettos. Have you had Gardettos?
Are they like the pretzel things?
Yeah, it's kind of like a off-brand Chex Mix without Chex. It's a good snack mix.
Do you get the original flavor?
Yeah, original. Yeah. And then let's see, we got Cheetos.
Straight up.
Just straight up crunchy Cheetos.
Those are good, dude. Cheetos are freaking good.
They're so good.
So cheesy, dude. How do they do it? Like,
I don't know.
I'm going to interrupt you for a moment, but my favorite apple is the Cosmic Crisp. Okay. Do you know about the Cosmic Crisp apple? Have I talked to you about this? Do you know about it?
I think I've heard of it. I don't know that I've ever.
It's just a variety of apple that they've been cultivating since like the 90s, like the late 90s, right? So, like, theoretically, this apple has only been in existence for, you know, 20 years, 25 years, right? And it is like so much better than any other apple, like, in my opinion. It's like so delicious. And so it's like, man, I wonder what apples are going to taste like in 50 years. And Cheetos are like the same thing. It's like, dude, 100 years ago, like, the amount of like flavor and everything that goes into a Cheeto, it's really like a marvel of technology and engineering. Like, they taste so good.
In the future, you can eat one Cheeto and it'll have the flavor of a whole bag of Cheetos.
Dude, my last buddy I was talking to, Colton, he was telling me about watching Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory with his daughter, the Gene Wilder version, you know? Like, have you seen that movie? Just how...
Not in forever.
It's just insane and chaotic. But yeah, dude, that's what he's inventing. He's like, you only have to have one. And then the kids are still fighting over it. I noticed that. Mm-hmm. They're like, I want two. He's like, I literally invented it, so you only have to have one. It's just funny. But all right. Sorry. So Cheetos. Anything else?
Cheetos, Sour Patch watermelons.
Nice.
Spicy sweet chili Doritos.
Those are freaking good, dude.
Those are my favorite Doritos.
Really? Better than the salsa verde?
I think so.
That's cool. They're pretty new, aren't they? They're a newer variety.
I think they're newer. At least the last few years.
What do you think Doritos will... What flavor of Doritos do you think will be the best in 50 years? Soylent Green?
I hope they don't make a Soylent Dorito. That'd be so boring.
Well, Soylent Green is from the...
Yeah, Soylent Green. Okay,
it's people.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I mean, that might be good.
It'll probably be like some freaking like... it'll be like some like late stage capitalism, like Steve's Lava Chicken Dorito flavor, but like they just like it was became so popular that like they just had to leave it forever, and now like that's lost to time. Like, kids don't even understand what Steve's Lava Chicken even is, but that's still the flavor of Dorito. That's what I think. It'll be like LeBron James slam dunk flavor presented by the NFL.
Exactly that. Yep.
That's cool.
Steve's Lava
They'll probably taste Doritos. Really freaking good though, dude. Like,
and it may not even taste like lava chicken.
It'll just be delicious.
It's just
that is an interesting trend. I don't know if that's newer, but I feel like it is a newer trend. Like the Travis Scott meal at McDonald's, and like these like celebrity, maybe Mr. Beast kind of started it, and like everybody else, like these like celebrity food crossover. I don't know. Wheaties boxes. Like, they've always had the guy on the Wheaties boxes, but it was never, like, explicit, right? Like, I feel like now there's, like, I don't know, like, explicit celebrity food brands or something. It's kind of like strange.
Yeah, like the Shaq pizza.
Is that a thing?
Papa John's, yeah. I think it's just, like, a big pizza with a lot of pepperoni.
Okay, like, here's my thing, okay? Like, so if Karl Malone wants to buy, like, a Ford dealership in American Ford, they should have, like, Karl Malone In-N-Out. Like, Karl Malone McDonald's. Like, Karl Malone... Why not, dude? Everything should just be celebrity brand endorsement. Like, anyways, maybe it'll be the Sam Warnick flavor of Dorito. What would the Sam Warnick flavor of Dorito taste like?
Probably Soylent. Just bland.
What the heck? Like, here's a thought for you. Soy sauce flavored Dorito.
Soy. Okay. Straight soy sauce.
Yeah, that's it.
Low sodium or high sodium?
Just keep them in. It's a brand deal.
Okay, I mean, that might be good.
I don't know.
I could see that. A Kikoman Dorito.
Did you ever go to Hoo Ha? Are you a patron of Hoo Ha? Do you like Hoo Ha Grill? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea
what really? I find that very fascinating, given your living location history, because there was one in a town where you used to live. But... it's a Mongolian barbecue, and part of it, like, one of the best... So you go through, and they've got, like, noodles, and then, like, all the meat and protein and all this stuff. But, like, my favorite part is, like, they have, like, 20 sauces or like 30 sauces, like all these different ones. And then they kind of have like recommended guides. So it's like, do 2 scoops of this one and 3 scoops of that one.
Okay.
But anyways, a couple of years ago, they had like a contest for like, you know, invent an official hoo-ha sauce or whatever. I can't remember what I put in mine, but it was a lot of soy sauce and it did not win. So I don't think that the Dave DeGrasse soy sauce Doritos are going to catch on, unfortunately. Maybe Gucci.
Have to keep working on it.
Gucci. How do you say Gucci-gong? The Korean thing. Gochujang.
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about?
My Korean's not very good.
All right. So the last question I want to ask you, Sam, besides myself, I think that you are probably the most prolific personal blogger, you know, that I personally know.
Okay.
Like, I was looking through your blog, and you have a lot of posts. Like, you write a lot. Tell me about that.
Tell you about what? Like, why or what? Like,
I seem to recall when question? I first met you, like, very strongly encouraging you to start a personal website.
Me encouraging you?
Me encouraging you. Like, it seems like when I first met you, you didn't have a blog. Mm. And then I turn around and it's like, wow, he's like one of the most prolific bloggers I know. So what is it inside of you that, like, why? Like, I'm, and again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a lot of posts. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's like, it's cool. Like, I know what motivates me to blog, but I'm curious for your perspective. Like, are you hoping that maybe that post will finally go viral and then you become the indie app developer you've always wanted to be, or what?
No, okay, so my blog is really just for me.
Yeah.
If other people see it and find it useful, that's great. But I, like, for a period, I thought, okay, I want to be like a like capital B blogger, like write tutorials and stuff and help people learn how to do things. That's just kind of exhausting. So it's kind of just turned into like my journal in a lot of ways. So I throw out a lot of stuff. I go off and on doing called dev logs, where I write about like what I did that day, you know, as a way, you know, as a stopping point kind of for the work, a way to brain dump. And then also I can look back and see progress.
How often do you find yourself going back and reading your old blog posts? And do you enjoy it, or does it make you like, how do you feel about it when you do that?
I do enjoy it. Some of them I think are a little cringy, like in the, when I see the ones.
Some of mine are, so I can relate. I'm not saying I think like, yours are cringy.
I think, you know, the ones I look back at where I go like, oh yeah, I was in my capital B blogger period where I wanted to like be, you know, more than I am. Those are a little bit cringy, but I still like them.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I look at my blog, you know, at least weekly. Yeah. You know, just, I don't know. I don't want to say like it's inspiring, but it's like maybe comforting kind of seeing something I made out on the internet that's like just mine.
Yeah, man. Like, so I think the last blog post that I put a lot of effort into is called 1,000 Tiny Slips of Paper, and the alternate title I was going with was This Is My Zettelkasten, which is like a German information management system where you write a bunch of crap down on papers. And like the picture that the Wikipedia has for that is just like, I mean, it looks like chaos. Like it just looks terrible. And I think that's freaking sweet. Like when you go across, like, dude, you know, and I don't have to explain this to you, maybe to the viewer, but like when you find just some person's random website that they've been doing for 6 months or freaking 16 years, it's just cool. Like, and they're so like idiosyncratic too. Like this dude, like, has a PhD level in nuclear biology, but like can't write CSS. Like it's just really cool, you know? So, I vibe with that.
It's awesome. Like finding people's blogs. Sometimes I find it a little depressing though. Like you're see it in 2025 in their last post is like 10 years ago or something. It's just like, man, I wish you wrote more. Like, I like what you wrote here. It would have been great.
Okay, well,
but I know it's not for everyone.
Well, check this out, dude, because like I found this band, like randomly I found this album that came out in the mid-2000s sometimes, I think. I don't even remember. Sometimes in the mid-2000s, this band, nobody listened to it. Nobody cares. Like, I found their website, I found an email, and I sent the dude an email, and I was just like, look, I really like your album, you know, and he replied. So, dude, I feel like it is kind of depressing, too, but I also, like, I really do try to, like, actively promote, like, people to just continue blogging, like, sending them emails and, like, leaving them a... Comments are hard, dude, especially when it's, like, a 10-year-old blog, because it's, like, sign up for a freaking comment bot or, like... Like, I'm not going to do that, you know? So I'll send you an email, though. I'll send you a quick note. And I found that people like that, so... But for you...
Yeah, it's a good thing to do.
Blogging is mostly just personal. For your own reference? For your own... Like, the exercise of it?
Yeah, mostly the exercise of it. Just get things out of my head. You know, it's like some of my more... touchy-feely posts, or, you know, just like journaling, just a way to work through what's in my head and try to organize my thoughts into a more coherent thing. And, you know, a lot of my posts maybe aren't coherent, but they help me.
You know, like, you're allowed to be incoherent out. Right, like, it's like that's your space. That's, that's kind of what you're saying, right? It's like you're not talking, you're not giving the commencement speech at Harvard, like,
right,
you're allowed to ramble. This is my Zettelkasten, right?
Like, most of my posts I write, you know, just like I sit down, write, and post. I don't do a lot of editing. Every once in a while I'll sit on it for a day or two and make a couple of changes and then post, but
that's pretty much my process, too. One thing I've been doing recently, I got this tip from somewhere random. I can't remember where. But they said to, like, proofread your own posts backwards. So, like, paragraph by paragraph, but go in reverse order. Just kind of helps you look at it from a different way and catch. I don't know, but, like, Chad, I don't know. I don't really trust LLMs to proofread my stuff. Because, like, if it's long enough, like, I'd, like...
Yeah.
Well, and my writing has, like, idiosyncrasies in it. Like, so it'll be, like, and I'm, like...
It can take a lot of the personality out. And then, like, I was using the Apple writing tools for a while, their proofread function. And just lately, it's just started mangling Markdown. Like, it just barfs all over it and destroys my post. So I'm, like, done with that.
Yeah.
So I need to actually proofread now.
So this is a question that maybe is it's just an honest question. To your knowledge, does anybody read your blog besides me and you? Do any of your family members, like your parents, or do they know about it?
I don't think they do.
Go ahead. What about anybody else? Do you know of anybody that reads your blog? That, like, specifically?
I don't know. No, I don't know of anyone that reads it. Like, I do have some analytics on it. There is a small amount of traffic. Like, I have a couple posts that I think show up in Google searches, but it's very minimal.
Does your spouse read your blog?
Every once in a while I'll send her a post, but I don't think she reads it regularly.
Yeah, okay. When you send her a post, does she read it?
Yeah, she does.
What posts do you find yourself sending her, like, just out of curiosity? Like, obviously a devlog, she probably doesn't give a crap about that, but, like, if you're particularly proud of it, or maybe if it references her or something?
Yeah, sometimes, honestly, I don't know the last one I sent her. Sometimes I'll have her proofread things if I think I'm sounding a little too whiny or angsty in them. I'll have her proofread it and just have her say, like, yeah, you're being a little whiny, but
then you publish it anyways.
No, I usually tone it back.
That's cool. Like, do you ever send, like, I don't know, like, I struggle with this, dude, because it's like, I like reaching out to people directly. Like, I really like deliberately one-on-one maintaining friendships and mm-hmm. just contact with people. I think for some people that kind of freaks them out. And like, I don't know, like when you have just that unread message bubble thing, like it's just kind of stressful, I think, for some people. I think Apple, some of the tools they're doing to like with focus modes and stuff kind of, but a lot of people don't really know how to do that. And so it's just like, sometimes I feel like my correspondence with people is overwhelming to them. And like, while it's not that they don't necessarily like it, it's just kind of like a lot, like, and they kind of, and then there's this obligation where they feel like, oh, they need to like reciprocate the level of output. Was like, nah, dude, I like work from home all day. So like, I got nothing else to do or no one to talk to, you know? So even if you just like, I don't even necessarily want you to read what I write. It's like, even if it doesn't offend you that I like send you so much crap. But I guess what I mean to say is like, yeah, dude, like sometimes I do send specific blog posts to specific people, but I do feel weird. Like, I don't know how to feel about it. Cause like, it's mostly just like, hey, look, like for me, I don't know, dude, like my freaking blog, I like way into it. Like, I was talking to my therapist this morning. I was like, look, if you want to give me like a Father's Day present, like just go read my blog. Like, not only will it give you an idea, but like that would, like, if you were like, Dave, I was reading your blog the other day, that would mm-hmm. like, that would mean the world to me, you know? Like, but at the same time, it's like, I don't want somebody to go read my blog. Like, anyways, and that's why it's hard. It's very difficult because the satisfaction is so few and far between. Like, it is such just a personal endeavor. Like, you're just like in a field by yourself playing with mud, like, and you're slipping and you like are hurting yourself even sometimes, you know? It's like, and you're like, what am I even doing? Like, but then I feel like occasionally like, you get these glimpses of light where somebody else just even notices and says like,
I almost view a blog as like an art installation out in the middle of a field somewhere where it's like, I've built this thing. I'm not even going to really tell you about it, but if you come across it and whatever, like, that's great. But like, I made this thing for myself.
Yeah, that's, I don't think we have time to get into that, but that is a question I want to talk to you about sometime because I don't know. I did this thing and I don't really want to tell you about it, but if you find it and like it, that would actually be like awesome. But the problem with that is like, that requires you to find it. Like, you have to just know, like you have to, mm-hmm. I feel like it's pretty obvious. Like, I don't know. Like, I know how to stalk people online. Like, and it's, I can figure out what they're doing and where they're active. Like, it's pretty easy for me, but, I guess for me, I feel like if it's objectively good, I feel an obligation to share it. Like, I do feel, not for fame, like, not because I want, like, validation or, like, really anything. I guess, okay, we write for ourselves, right? But there are a lot of people out there that are a lot like us. Like, there are a lot of people that are not like us, but there are a lot of people that are like us. And there are a lot of people that were like us, like we were 10 years ago, you know, like people that are less mm-hmm. experienced. So I think that for me, that's why I feel like a big obligation to like to share it, like to do try to make efforts to, I don't know. It's not self-aggrandizement, really. That's not the intent. The intent is just like publicity, like letting you know that, I don't know, this is out there. But what is my question? That's not a very good question. That's just a ramble. I guess my question is like, yeah, where do you sit on that? I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but like, you were just, you know, like, this is personally, purely personal. I don't know. You pay SamWarnick.com every year though, dude. Like, if you really didn't want people, I guess you want people to be able to find it.
Yeah. It's not that if I didn't want people to see it, I wouldn't put it on the internet. Is just like a difference of, you know, I don't always go out of the way to broadcast that. Sometimes I do, and I think it's fine, but it's, I don't know. I don't always broadcast it because there's always something in the back of my mind that like, well, maybe my site isn't ready for people to see it, but...
What if they make fun of me? What if I'm dumb? That's what I think. Like, what? Yeah. Like, I published my personal testimony of Jesus Christ, and I'm like, wow, this is a good idea. Like, I've been on Reddit to know that that's a great idea. Not, but I don't know, dude. It's like, or else what? Like, what are they going to do? Come kick my door down? My kids are. Just a minute, please. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up. Okay. What is one question that you wish someone would ask you about yourself? Like, what's something you want to tell someone? I know you're a pretty private guy.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. You've asked this question before, and I can't remember what I've said, but I don't know. I kind of just want people to like ask, like, what do you like to do in your free time? Because I don't think, I don't know, people don't do that. Like, I have a lot of conversations at work with managers and other employees, and yeah, it's always business. They never just ask, like, what do you like to do? And so
it's very interesting, because I feel like everybody wants to be asked that question, and most people will tell you the answer to mm-hmm. that question, right? Like, I like, yeah, anyways, like, they just want to, like, they're just like, oh yeah, you know, this weekend I don't know, it's like, this bug is going to be easier than that turkey I shot this week. Like, they want you to know, mm-hmm. like, right, they just like, they yeah. you have to know, they want. But you're saying, like, and I don't know, like, is that kind of what you're saying? Like, like, dude, just like, just ask me, and I would actually love to ask you, but like, we don't have to, like, we can just be direct about it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you asking what you like to do in your free time is a better question than like, what did you do over the weekend? Because usually my answer is nothing. Like, woke up and you know, wrangled the raccoons.
Yeah, they're all like, day. What did you do last weekend? And you're like,
yeah,
like, thanks for the reminder. You know? Yeah. So what do you like to do in your free time?
I like to, you know, collect Legos. I like to collect Pokemon cards.
You collect what? Legos?
Lego sets.
I thought they were called Lego.
No, Lego is the company. And then you would have Lego bricks or Lego sets.
So you collect Lego sets?
I collect pieces and sets.
All Lego item products.
Yeah, maybe not the merch, but
theoretically, though, if it was good enough. Yeah. So is there you have a Lego town village?
Yep.
A street. Yep. Is that primarily what you're interested in Lego is like city? What do they call that? City craft?
The theme. Yeah, it'd be their city theme. I think, yeah, recently that's what I'm most interested in. I mean, we could go on for a while, so I don't want to keep you, but
I want, yeah. Dang, I should have asked about that first.
Yep.
That's good advice.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
And you like collecting Pokemon cards with your kids?
Yep. Collect Pokemon with the kids. That's been fun.
It's just fun. It's just fun.
Yeah. I like hobbies that involve organizing stuff, research and organizing.
Yeah. How much less satisfying do you think it would be to open a pack of Pokemon cards if the foil wasn't silver, like, if it was, like, just normal paper? Like, if it wasn't shiny when you opened it, like, I feel like it'd be significant. Like, it's just fun to open a pack of Pokemon cards, dude. Like, it just, yeah. And they're, like, almost from, like, a primal, like, what are those birds that hoard shiny? Like, there's just something gross about me. It's like, in the way that the plastic sounds, even, like, and the way yeah. the cards smell when they come out, like, and the way they feel when they come out. And isn't there usually a slight concave to them, even, like, when they're fresh? Or are they always, like, flat?
They should hopefully be flat. Sometimes the hollows can be a little curved.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, just, you guys, I know you like collecting EV cards, evolutions.
Yeah.
You've been doing streams with your kids opening packs and things that I don't fully grasp, but collecting Pokemon cards. What other things do you like to do in your free time?
I mean, that's, yeah, tinker on my apps and website and stuff. So
what's the most recent hobby that you've developed, would you say? Like, is there any, I know you talked about, I was reading a blog and you were talking about a hobby that you want to get back into that I was surprised. Nah, that's a bad question. I should have written it down, but yeah, do you have any hobbies you've gotten like back into recently or tried to get back into? Or
yeah, was hobbies? It drawing?
Drawing. It was drawing.
Yeah.
How's
yeah.
that going?
I'm not doing it. So I did the card project. So
yeah.
That's when I thought like, man, maybe I should get back into this. Like, this has been fun. I bought the new iPad Pro because I thought like, all right, I'm going to do digital art. But then I returned it and haven't had the urge to do it since. So it's like, it's one of those things that if I have a project, I like to do it, but I don't necessarily find it enjoyable to sit down and draw.
That's
for the sake of drawing.
What kind of drawing do you like to do? Just like any, like, I mean, historically you've drawn, like, what do you draw? Cartoons or what?
Yeah,
sketches or what? Like,
yeah, sketches. Like I've tried, you know, different mediums of like, you know, marker or watercolor and stuff, but I like landscapes.
Yeah,
like there's all these like art that I just love and would love to be able to make myself, but I just don't have the time or energy to invest into it.
Yeah, I guess I was just kind of wondering because like it's kind of the double-edged sword of technology, like where technology can help us solve problems, but like it also kind of becomes a thing in and of itself that's like self-serving kind of thing. It's like, I don't know, people are stressing out about getting their camera to record the baby's birthday perfectly, but mm-hmm. it's like just seeing heavy, like, you know what I mean? Like just live in the moment kind of thing. And so you kind of like, you talked about the iPad and like, you have this grand idea of like, and maybe part of it is even like marketing and like, maybe there's validity there, right? Like you want to be this like Apple creative professional, but I kind of wondered like, yeah, just like a pencil and paper, you know, like especially,
yeah.
Well, I guess I say that because today I was researching and learning about the artist, this guy named Maynard Dixon. You ever heard of him?
I think I've heard of him.
He did a lot of like Southwest landscape like paintings, but well, apparently what he would do is he would go on like just trips through, you know, the Southwest, and he would sketch them. So he'd sketch these landscapes and then he'd go back to his studio and paint them out or finish them or whatever. But
yeah.
I don't know, dude, I just had this glimpse of Sam Warnick being this like naturalist guy, like, you know, a twig cracks in the forest and a robin flies away and there's Sam there like sketching it out on his, in his lead holder with his very specific Japanese paper that apparently is out of print or whatever. Anyways.
Yeah, I would like that too, but nah.
Yeah, same. It's like the romanticization of buying like a new notebook. It's like you have this like picture of yourself like weather torn, like having summited like a peak, like you're this rugged guy, but like then I've literally got a notebook just propping my monitor up, you know. But, I don't know. An empty notebook is it depressing or is it full of possibility?
I think it's depressing, and that's why I use loose leaf paper.
Yeah, dude. Because
a single piece of paper is that's possibility.
Yeah, there's no commitment. There's no obligation. Yeah. Like, well, there's maybe a little obligation, but if you waste a piece of paper, you can throw it away. Nobody knows. But if you burn a page in your notebook, you can rip it out. But good luck with that. So, all right, Sam, I'm going to let you go to bed, but this has been super fun, and I really appreciate you taking the time to sit here and talk to me and answer my silly questions about your life and let me pick your brain.
It was enjoyable. Thanks for having me.
Dude, thanks for coming.
Interrobang.